You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today. I'd like to welcome my colleague, Eric. Welcome to the table.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Nice to have you back here. We're going to be sitting in for Tom today. Got a jam-packed show, lots to talk about. But the breaking news, Eric, is this Ebola scare, you know, the threat of worldwide epidemic. And the guy in Texas
died.
Breaking news.
Poor guy.
Yeah, he just died. Thomas Eric Duncan. The man, he's known as the man with Ebola. That's unfortunately his designation now. But he died. He was treated in a Dallas hospital at the Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas. And despite all modern medicine and efforts to save this guy, they just couldn't do it. The virus took hold. And
I'm hearing sirens right now. I'm thinking maybe they're going to catch another Ebola victim. But, well, hey, dude, remember when I just talked to you about this off air. Remember
right?
when we talked about, what was this, months ago?
Sure.
You said it would never come to the U.S.
I didn't think it would. I did not think it would. But here's the thing about viruses, Eric, and this is the crazy thing. This is the scary thing as well. Viruses can change. Viruses can,
right, they can
mutate,
evolve.
And they can evolve over time. So you could have a virus that pretty much is contained, and all of a sudden it just changes its molecular genetics. And all of a sudden, now you got a virus that we have no treatment for, can infect people more readily, and
then
can spread more readily and can adapt. See, this is what people generally don't understand or realize, is that these viruses, Eric, they're not static things. They want to live just like we do.
I'm no doctor, but I know that.
No, but you use a very interesting word, because you use the word adapt. And that's what these viruses do over time. Even HIV. Look, if you go back to HIV in the early 1980s when it first came out, HIV now has evolved. And once we finally figured out what HIV was, we were able to develop drugs to treat HIV infection. But as this virus, Eric, saw these drugs, eventually the virus said, hey, I've seen you before. And what it would do is it would change maybe a protein on its coat, or it would change the way that it replicated its DNA, so that then that drug no longer works and becomes resistant to the HIV infection. So these viruses literally adapt and change and try to find ways to avoid our modern day medicine. Think of us like a military, basically. We're the military, right? And our immune system's the military. We're trying to figure out a way to kill that virus and fight that virus. But
wow, way to compare that to ISIS.
Well, right? Well, we need to behead this virus is what we need to do. But the bottom line is it's true. These viruses find ways to adapt. You could think of them like terrorists. And honest to God, they are like terrorists. And if you really think about it, they kill way more people than terrorists you could even imagine, Eric. I mean, even in the United States alone, I've spoken about this in prior shows, I believe, but even just medical errors, forget about infections, medical errors alone cause about 100,000 deaths in this country every year. 100,000 deaths every year from medical errors alone. And then when you compare that,
that's crazy,
to 9/11, we lost tragically, what, 3,000 people on 9/11 plus, you know, more than 3,000 people.
Well, Ebola's killed more than that now.
Right. So this is I'm putting this into perspective. So if you think about that, 100,000, that's like 30 9/11s every year from medical errors. It has nothing to do with infections. Infections kill way more people. Actually, do me a quick search here, or get one of our interns on this. Find out how many people in America die each year of infections. And I can assure you it's going to be in the hundreds of millions, probably, of infections, just all infections included, pneumonia, sepsis, everything. But my point is this, is that when you look at what we did after 9/11, and we talked about the terrorists and the threat to our liberties and our freedoms, after 3,000 people died tragically, we invested, we spent hundreds of millions of dollars, you can argue trillions of dollars, to fight these so-called terrorists who killed 3,000 people. So I want to frame this show by asking the question, what are we doing for the terrorists that we can't see? And by that, I mean the micro world, the world of bacteria, the world of viruses. Here we have Ebola now that potentially could break out into a worldwide pandemic. We don't know that. Look, right now we think it's controlled. But my point is this. What are we going to do, one, as a country, the United States of America? Two, what are we going to do as a human species to really start addressing these real terrorists These terrorists that worldwide kill tens and hundreds of millions of people. But yet we're not investing in the technology, the infrastructure, the research, the development to fight these viruses, to fight these bacteria, to fight these fungi and these parasites. Eric, you have an update?
Yeah, according to hospitalinfection.org, who knew that there was a website like that?
But right.
Anyway, it says that the CDC claims that 1.7 million people contract infections in the U.S. hospitals each year. They're saying around 880,000 victims a year.
Yeah, well, that's just in the hospital contracting infections.
But this website claims that the 1.7 million is just a fraction of what it really is.
No, it is a fraction. And then, like I said, worldwide, it's tens of millions. I mean, you start including malaria and tuberculosis and other things. So this is how I want to open up the show. Let me give the phone lines out, too. 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. We're going to keep the Freedom Lines open throughout the show. Anybody wants to hop along, the Freedom Express, feel free to do so. Just give us a call. We could talk about Ebola. We could talk about bioterrorism. We could talk about infectious diseases. Obviously, there's lots of big races going on right now, Eric. November's right around the corner. The midterm elections are upon us. Even here in Arizona, we have a huge race for governor. Fred Duval running against Doug Ducey, the Republican candidate, and Barry Hess, the Libertarian candidate right now.
I heard him on another radio program, Ducey.
Did you?
Yeah, he's so funny because he can't even answer a question without mentioning ice cream.
Right.
Somebody asked him the other day on another radio program, what makes you a better candidate? And he's like, don't you like ice cream?
Oh, my lordy. Well, we'll
that was his answer.
We could talk about him a little bit later. But that's a tight race, though, because Arizona historically has not done well in the last few elections at the statewide level. They've done as far as the Democrats, I should say. The Democrats have not done well at the statewide level, but they've done well at the congressional level. But statewide hasn't been a pretty picture. So right now, he is tied with Doug Ducey in this race. It's like 40%, 40%. So it's anybody's race with just 4 weeks left. And that could be a major, major pickup for Democrats across the country to get a governorship, a Democratic governor in the state, Eric, of Arizona.
Right. And I guess I should put it out there because there are people listening worldwide that don't know really much about Arizona politics. But Doug Ducey is the guy who ran Cold Stone Creamery.
Right.
And I don't even know if that's a national chain or not, but it was a pretty big chain here. It kind of.
Yeah, it became kind of a franchise. But again, he's been accused of a lot of
ripping people off.
Ripping people off that, you know, people who bought into a franchise, started a franchise.
And he promised them there'd be all these big numbers. The numbers didn't come. And then he would squeeze them out and resell it.
Right. Exactly. And then ultimately he sold it. And from what I understand, because he refuses to come clean and tell us what happened in the transaction.
Don't you like ice cream, Mike?
He says he's this great businessman. But apparently this transaction went for like $80 million initially. And then afterwards, the people who bought Cold Stone Creamery found out afterwards that, wait, all these numbers don't look right. It looks like the books might have been cooked or something. And
allegedly.
And then they went back to the table through arbitration and through reports and things that I've seen and read on the internet. That $80 million sale got reduced to almost like, I don't know, $16 million or something
like
that.
Wow, what a great businessman.
Yeah, like five times less.
Not only that, there used to be like a ton of Cold Stone Creameries, and they all started closing down, and now there's only like a handful of them left.
Right. So he was kind of blaming it on the economy and this and that. But look, if you're supposed to be such a great businessman,
everybody likes ice cream no matter what the economy is.
Right, even in bad times, right? Actually, you'd probably like it even more in bad times. You need something to kind of pick you up and some comfort food. So, yeah, that's Doug Ducey. But we'll have Fred Duval, the candidate for the Democratic Party, here at the bottom of this hour. But, again, I want to open up those phone lines. It's 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Today you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. And again, the breaking news, Thomas Eric Duncan, the man with Ebola in Dallas, Texas, has passed away today.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Hey, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in. We're going to get to your calls here in a quick second. But again, just to reiterate, big breaking news on CNN. They said that Thomas Eric Duncan, the man who came to our shores from Africa, who was diagnosed with Ebola. He was admitted to the Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, and he's been there, I think, for about a week now. And just over a week, he has now been pronounced dead. He has died in the hospital.
Didn't he lie to get into the country?
Well, look, this is going to be one of the things we're going to talk about today, too, Eric, is that they're trying now to put in place screening procedures, particularly at airports, where they want to see whether or not somebody has symptoms of Ebola. Okay.
So what are they going to, like, make everyone take off their shoes and take a
thermometer?
Thermometer.
Well, they're taking their temperatures, but I don't think they're going to use rectal thermometers, Eric.
Well, that would be embarrassing.
It would be embarrassing. I think they're going to just take the temperatures, and if they have a fever greater than like 101, then they are going to sort of remove them from the line and, you know, ask more questions, maybe even quarantine them. So here's the problem with that.
That would be the prudent thing to do, wouldn't it, to quarantine them?
It could be. But look, first of all,
at least
fever is a very nondescript finding. I mean, people can get fevers for all kinds of things.
And you can reduce the fever by taking medication.
Exactly. And what they're saying is, in this particular case, because people are coming from, you know, Liberia, Monrovia, and Guinea, and Nigeria, that belt over there where it seems to be most of the Ebola outbreak, Eric, the health care system there is terrible, Eric. In many cases, they're reusing needles. Can you believe that? They're actually taking needles and reusing them, and by reusing them and not sterilizing them properly, they're propagating the spread of the virus.
And many other diseases as well.
And many other diseases as well. So, and on top of that, many of even the hospitals don't have running water in these areas. So if these people get infected, it's almost like a death sentence because they don't have the infrastructure technologically to treat the patients. Because there is – well, first of all, there's no treatment, just so you know.
Right.
There is no treatment to cure Ebola. In certain cases, like a bacterial infection, say you get pneumonia, we might be able to give an antibiotic to treat that bacterial infection that kills the bacteria, and then your body cleans up the rest. But in many cases with viruses, we don't have – viral antibiotics that work like bacterial antibiotics that can just kill the viruses. In some cases we do, but in many viral illnesses, treatment is what we consider in medical terminology supportive. And what I mean by supportive, Eric, is that you support
you'll be okay.
Well, no, not that kind of support. Yeah, not just some coaching and, you know, hey, you're going to feel better. It's supporting your vital organs. So for instance, with Ebola, you can get your liver shut down. Your kidney can shut down. But at least over here, if your kidney shuts down, you could at least probably get dialysis, right, to support your kidneys temporarily in the hopes that they might recover some function, if not all the function. But if you're in Africa and you don't have access to dialysis, you don't have access to an intensive care unit, you don't have access to specialists, Eric, who can give you state-of-the-art care and follow you on a routine basis – if that's the case, don't you think that these people think, well, boy, if I'm going to get the virus here, I'm just going to die. I need to get to America or I need to get to somewhere in Europe.
But did that guy know?
Well,
when he came here?
Well,
he lied about not being next to people with Ebola. He carried some pregnant woman.
The jury is out. He ultimately, when he first got involved with this, you're right, there was a pregnant woman and he basically – she had collapsed, and he, along with some neighbors, family members, obviously first instinct is to help somebody, right? Somebody collapses and unconscious, you're going to help her.
And you don't know what's wrong
with her. So that's what they did. Well, it turns out she ended up dying, and she had Ebola, and he contracted it from that. So we'll talk more about the specifics later as far as what's the dormancy, how long is the incubation period, when are you actually in – effective to other people. But the point is this, Eric, when you live in a healthcare system that if you get this diagnosis and you contract this virus, you know it's a death sentence. And you probably only have a window of a week to 2 weeks to three to live. These people are going to try to get out of that country and try to get care. I don't care what anyone says. There's going to be some people who are going to try to leave. And like you said, if they're trying to do screenings now and they're taking your temperature, well, like you said, you could take ibuprofen, you could take Tylenol, you could take some antipyretic and mask the symptom so that you can get on that plane. And then the other thing is the symptoms sometimes are very common symptoms, sore throat, muscle aches.
God, I have all that right now.
Fatigue. I mean, those are initial symptoms of Ebola. I mean, you don't get like some of the more pronounced features like the hemorrhagic stuff where you start vomiting up from your gut. You start bleeding everywhere. You're bleeding into your skin. It's also called hemorrhagic fever because you hemorrhage. You bleed into so many places. Obviously, that would be obvious if somebody's trying to go through the airport coughing up blood and, you know,
bleeding from their ears or their eyes.
You would think that's easy. But the other symptoms are very subjective, and it's not that easy, I think, to screen people. So in any case, look, I'm going to get to the Freedom Lines here in a second. We're going to go to a break here. But let me just give you the numbers. The phone lines are packed right now, and a lot of people calling in have a lot of very good questions about this. 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. We're going to get to your calls in a second, but the breaking news is that Tom Sarek Duncan, the Ebola patient who was being treated in Dallas, Texas, has died. This is the first death that I'm aware of on American soil from Ebola, and who knows what's to come.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, hand washing is one of the best ways to prevent infections. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in here. And just as a point of order, Eric, apparently some of the people calling into the program saying I'm an armchair.
A quack.
Yeah, a quack. But I actually am, I don't want to say a real doctor because, you know, a PhD is a real doctor too, but I'm actually a medical doctor.
A physician.
I'm a physician. I am an MD. I'm not like Dr. Phil, Dr. Laura, Dr. Dre.
And you're actually, if they look at freespeech.tv, you're wearing your scrubs.
I'm doing a shout out. I'm saying hello to everybody on the TV via the internet.
Look at you in your scrubs.
Look at that. Those are real scrubs.
Hey, is there a difference in color? I mean, do you like have to wear, like at Mayo, when I was in the Mayo Clinic?
Yeah.
They all had different colors depending on what job they did. So
No, there's no pecking order,
no
designation. This is just a two-tone kind of scrubs that I picked up. But in any case, so I am a real doctor, a medical doctor.
I play one on the radio.
And I play one on the radio, too. Do you remember they used to do that, though, in the soap operas? I used to watch General Hospital when I was a kid.
So did I when I was a kid.
I'm revealing my age here, but I used to love the Luke and Laura kind of thing.
Isn't it still on?
I think so. I think Luke is still in it, actually.
Yeah, he came back after years.
I don't know if Laura's still in it, but I remember the Luke and Laura saga. But it always would crack me up because then you would see commercials where these doctors from these soap operas would go on TV and in a commercial say, I am not a doctor.
Endorsing a product.
Yeah, they'll say, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. And then they would give some type of endorsement.
Right, and you need to buy Excedrin.
Right, absolutely. It was like, well, I guess it worked. But, okay, let's get to some of the calls. People have been very patient here. Let's go first to Catherine, who is listening in Madison, Wisconsin. Catherine, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi. Just a couple quick things about the Ebola, and then I wanted to mention about antibiotics. The gentleman, first of all, didn't have insurance, which is, I think, why they didn't take him seriously at the emergency room.
Right.
And secondly...
Right, because and just so people know that, Catherine, he was not turned away, but he went to the emergency room initially, and they didn't admit him, and from what I understand, they did not really zone in on his travel history, like where he had recently come from, so they sent him back out into the community.
Right, and he didn't have insurance. I think that was a big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Second thing is, he lied because he was coming here to marry someone, and you know how in your human consciousness you just don't want to think anything bad's going to happen?
Sure.
And third, they didn't use any experimental drugs on him. This information was, like, through his family and on the Reverend Jesse program on Keep Hope Alive on Sunday. Anyway,
sure.
I wanted to mention the bigger picture. I know that's bacterial and there's viruses. And Family Farm Defenders is doing a lot of work on how the misuse on the big farms of the antibiotics are.
Sure.
And I'm sure as a doctor you know, at least I went to a talk, and the doctor from UW here from infectious diseases says there's at least 9 antibiotics that are just about ineffective.
Yeah, they're resistant. They develop resistance because, look, if you start feeding these animals these antibiotics, these bacteria, these microbiological agents, they see them and they become accustomed. They're not stupid. They basically say, look, you keep showing me the same thing over and over again. Eventually, I'm going to figure out a way to beat it or avoid it. So you're 100% correct. There is a huge threat to the public well-being because of these multi-resistant organisms that are developing because of injudicious use of antibiotics in the animal population. But let me get back to your other thing, Catherine, because you hit on a very, very good point.
Well, let me just say something quickly. If people go to Family Farm Defenders talk on antibiotics, they can read about it in detail. So what was the point you're going to go back to?
Yeah. So what I wanted to tell you, though, was your point about health insurance, because we really do have a two-tiered healthcare system in this country. We have people who have insurance and people who don't. And you're 100% right. I've seen this throughout my career where people who don't have health insurance, if they go to the hospital, they get a whole different level of care versus somebody who does have insurance. And they're more likely, the hospital, if they realize that this patient can't pay for the care that's needed, they're going to send them home because they don't want to incur the cost. They don't want the debt. And
even if they have an Ebola, Mike?
Well, look, I'm not saying they purposely do that, but what I'm just saying is that if you don't have insurance, you are more likely to be discharged from an emergency room prematurely than if you do have insurance. And that's unfortunate. And in this circumstance, Catherine, you pointed it out, that could have very well happened in this case. So, look, I appreciate your call. I'm going to get to some of the other callers right now. But that's something that Tom was kind of talking about offline, if you heard Tom's feed there earlier. He was talking about all the other issues that we have in our healthcare system right now that are not causing this kind of hysteria or this scare. And look, I'm not trying to make you hysterical about the Ebola virus, but I do agree with Tom in the sense, and that's why I told you earlier, that 100,000 people die in this country every year of medical errors. That's 30 plus 9/11s every year. It's like having a 9/11, you know, almost two or to three 9/11s every month. But you don't hear hysteria about the war on medical errors. As Tom mentioned earlier, you also have many people who die of cancer. We have many people who die of congestive heart failure, who die of diabetes mellitus, who die of infectious diseases. There's lots of deaths. There's an enormous amount of death in healthcare. But you never hear the hysteria about the war on congestive heart failure, the war on cancer, the war on infectious diseases, to the extent that you're hearing about Ebola. Now, look, I get it. I understand about Ebola. And if you look back, Eric, we were doing a little research earlier, and just to the flu of 1918, this is, you know, in our time. I mean, I've treated patients who were alive at that particular time, 1918. I mean, how many years ago is that? It's almost 100 years ago.
Yeah.
96.
90-some years
96,
ago.
Yeah. So I currently have patients who were born, you know, kind of then. That plague, the flu at that time, the Spanish flu, I believe it was called, 500 million people worldwide were infected. Over 60 million people died as a result of that. 60 million people. And then the other thing, to put it into perspective, go back to the 1300s, 1346 to 1353. You had the bubonic plague, the Black Death, right?
Yeah.
Back then, they estimated that 75 to 200 million people died as a result of that. I mean, and there weren't as many people, Eric, back in the 1300s
today.
There's not that many people left.
Just enough to repopulate, I guess.
Well, absolutely. Actually, if you go back to some of the early days of mankind, they said that there was maybe only tens of thousands of human beings left before we were on the verge of extinction.
That was when the Earth was created 6,500 years ago, right?
Yes, with the dinosaurs at the same time. But in any case, so look, we live in a very perilous time. You're always living in a perilous time. And the human species could at any given moment, honestly, become eradicated, whether it's through a nuclear bomb going off, whether it's through a meteor, a natural catastrophe, or it could be through infectious diseases and plagues. I mean, we have to be vigilant against these diseases. And obviously, that's what we're talking about today with Ebola, is we can say it's not a big threat or it's nothing to worry about or, you know, no harm, no foul. We got it under control. And we probably do at this particular point, but you can never remain complacent, Eric. As we said, you have genetic mutations, genetic drift. Things can change. I mean, you just don't know.
Well, I mean, what are the chances that it could become aerosolized or whatever?
Well, look, right now, based off of evidence, Dr. Fauci, he was talking about this and saying that based off of evidence, there's no indication right now that it actually can be transmitted airborne. However, there are other doctors who disagree. Some doctors say that they've looked at a study on rhesus monkeys, and based off of their observations, they felt that the Ebola virus was being transmitted through aerosol, because right now they believe it's just through physical contact, bodily contact with fluids, with, you know, blood, feces, well, vomit, saliva, semen. It's in your semen. And also, they say even after you clear it from your, after you quote-unquote have cleared it from your body, it could still remain in semen up to, like, I think 7 weeks or more after that, even though you're not showing any signs or symptoms at all of the illness. So this is the point, Eric, is that when things like this can be transmitted from person to person and then people die quickly like that, the whole thing is about containment then. You have to contain it, and you have to identify every single contact that that person has been in contact with.
Right, and that's kind of hard to do.
Well, especially as it starts ballooning out of control. I mean, if you only have a few thousand cases like they have in Africa, you know, maybe that's doable.
A few thousand cases, that's a lot of contact.
Well, there's a lot of contact if you start saying, because this one patient that they asked, I think it was the woman who had died, the pregnant woman that we talked about earlier, and she had died, and this is who Thomas Eric Duncan had been in contact with. They feel that she was in contact with about 100 people.
And in turn, how many people
were
they
in
contact
with? And so on and so on. Right. So this is where I can see the public can be a little bit fearful about the possibility that this thing could sort of spiral out of control. Look, let me get to some...
By the way, real quick, you know my significant other very well, Kathleen.
Yes.
She is, like, totally obsessed with this Ebola thing, and she's afraid to go to the supermarket and eat food. I mean, because they say you can't get it from food, but what if somebody sneezes on your food?
Well, I think she's maybe overreacting a little bit there.
Well, check this out. My son told me that his high school, all the kids are wearing masks because every day they make announcements about Ebola over the speaker system. Is that over the top?
That's over the top, I think.
They've
so,
got all the kids, the students panicked.
No, they shouldn't be doing that. I think there was more chance of me getting something from that ham, egg, and cheese sandwich you brought me today from Circle K.
Hey, you ordered it.
Yeah, I asked Eric to get me something before the show, and he brings me back a ham, egg, and cheese.
I told you I was going to Circle K, dude. What do you expect?
Yeah, but it was completely cold.
I know. They didn't have any warm ones. You throw it in the microwave for 15 seconds. Oh, you're good to go.
No, that looked disgusting. I put it in the refrigerator. I'm not going to eat it. All right, listen. In any case, we're going to be back. Stick with us. We got a full board of callers right now. People calling in from Oregon, Massachusetts, California, Illinois, Colorado, Oregon, Arizona. We're going to be back after this short break, and stay with us. I believe we're going to have Fred Duvall, the Democratic candidate for governor in the state of Arizona.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and don't forget to eat your vegetables. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom today. We have a special guest on the line. His name is Fred Duvall. He is the Democratic candidate for governor here in this great state, our home state of Arizona, where we're broadcasting live today from Phoenix, Arizona. So a very warm welcome to Fred Duvall. Fred, how are you, buddy?
Thank you, Dr. Mike. I'm doing very, very well. Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Fred, we've been talking about the Ebola virus, and I know one of your main campaign themes is education. And the reason I bring that up, Fred, is that the people at the forefront of containing this disease, fighting this disease, are going to be doctors, scientists, researchers, people that, you know, you have referred to in your campaign as knowledge workers. And I know education is very important to you in this campaign. So maybe you can dovetail into that and talk a little bit about education and why it's so important to you as a candidate for governor here in Arizona.
Well, look, I really appreciate it. Arizona has cut education spending faster than any state in the country in recent years, and we're seeing the signs of that across all of our schools, community colleges, and universities. And, you know, as you've noted, in watching the Ebola virus and watching other things, smart workforce, be it in the nursing sector, be it in the transport sector, be it in the medical profession, be it across the entire culture, the better, more talented our workforce is, the better our healthcare is going to be, the better our economic growth is going to be, the more innovative our economy is going to be, the more Arizona and the country will be inventing new cures, new ideas, new inventions that will help us grow a long-term economy. And certainly it's true in the healthcare sector like everything else. But really, you know, the 21st century is about talent. It's about making sure that every person can bring their full skills to bear on the economy. And The cuts that we've seen in Arizona to education are putting us at a disadvantage in that new world that's coming towards us.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Fred, where does Arizona stand with respect to funding per pupil?
Well, we've always been in the mid-40s, but in the last 5 years, we've sunk further because we've cut an additional 20% from K-12 education in the last 5 years. And it got so bad that our Supreme Court has now recently upheld a voter initiative that was passed a little over a decade ago, forcing the legislature to rebuild our schools and to enforce an inflation formula in our school funding. And, you know, the conservatives are doing everything they can to resist the court order, everything they can to balance the budget on the backs of our school children and our schools, and it's just got to stop or else Arizona will not grow the way we need it to, and we're currently not growing the way that we're accustomed to. You know, businesses are not coming here at the same rate. Our unemployment rate is a full point above the national average. Arizona has made a sequence of bad decisions that has hurt us. Obviously, the 1070, 1062 style of politics in Arizona has hurt us. You know, the Koch brothers are here with their checkbooks open and making massive investments to try and make Arizona, you know, sort of a petri dish of their philosophy. And it's just it's heading in the wrong direction, and we're going to turn it around in about 28 days.
No, absolutely. And, Fred, this is obviously a very close election right now, which is great for your campaign. I mean, from the polls that I've seen, it's statistically tied. So you are poised, you know, to really come out here at the closing of this campaign and race past your opponent. Tell me, what are you seeing out there with respect to the people on the ground? Because for this race to be tied, that means that your message has to be resonating with a lot of moderate Republicans, independents, progressives. It seems like you're building a really nice coalition.
I appreciate your noticing that. We've put ads together in the Republic, our major Phoenix newspaper, with literally hundreds of Republicans. I do events constantly with folks, be they Republican or independent, who are just saying, we know what we're doing is broken. We know the direction Arizona is going will not give our kids the kind of shot in life that they deserve. And we know that these self-inflicted things like 1062 and 1070.
Sure, the black eye on our state.
Have really hurt our growth and our economy. And increasingly, businesses are asking less about taxes and regulations and more, will my kids get the kind of education they need? Will my workforce have the skills that they need? And it transcends party politics. There is a deep sense that we're in trouble, that we've got to make a change, and that's why we're building this bipartisan coalition that will be required to win in Arizona, and I think I'm on the verge of doing so.
No, absolutely. Fred, let's talk a little bit about choice, too, with respect to choice and health care. I mean, one of the things that I, as a physician myself, have been very disturbed about what I've seen coming through the Arizona legislature recently is this whole concept of sort of making women go through mandatory waiting periods if they want to, you know, have a termination of a pregnancy, this conscience law that would allow pharmacists not to prescribe medicines that doctor prescribed. There's even some speculation about making women go through invasive vaginal ultrasounds against their own wishes. Can you talk about the issue of choice here in the state of Arizona?
Absolutely. We have a very powerful entity in Arizona, which led by a woman named Kathy Herod, who has made the restriction of women's reproductive choice a signature issue. She's also the author of the 1062 law, which, of course, causes such painful national discussion. And we have watched Arizona steadily erode women's reproductive choices among a variety of platforms having to do with funding issues, with legal restrictions, et cetera. And I think it is one of the reasons why so many Republican women have kind of had it up to their eyebrows with these sort of repressive policy approaches and are looking for something different and embracing my campaign and both the Republican and Democratic campaigns that are willing to say, you know, we recognize as a settled federal law and as a policy that we need to pursue in Arizona that women really ought to be able to make their own reproductive choices, that we, you know, the Hobby Lobby decision certainly was the most recent manifestation of this other trend, It's one of the issues upon which Republican women are embracing our campaign.
No doubt. Well, listen, Fred, we're coming up on the end of the segment. If people want to get in contact with your campaign, they want to participate, help you out, what can they do?
Thanks so much. It's fred2014.com, and this is where we turn Arizona in a new direction, stop the Koch brothers, protect the women's right to choose, and most importantly, protect against further cuts to K-12 education. And so I certainly invite folks from anywhere in the country to help us
absolutely. Okay, sounds good. Fred, thank you so much.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom. This is hour number two. A special thanks to our previous guest, Fred Duval, running for governor here in Arizona in a very tight race. But, Eric, it looks very promising. It looks like we can have a Democratic governor within the next 30 days. It's doable. Within grasp right now.
Yeah, and I had a lot of questions for him, but you wouldn't let me ask.
Well, he only had like 10 minutes, so, you know, that's how it goes when you're out there on the campaign trail. You know, it's a very tight schedule. But I think it's fred2014.com
is
the actual website. So if you want to check it out, learn a little bit more about Fred, if you want to volunteer, donate, all these things that you do with campaigns, just go to fred2014.com. Now, we have a very special guest on the line right now. We've been talking about Ebola and... what better person to speak to, Eric, than the people literally in the front lines, the nurses? The nurses are on the front lines of our healthcare systems, not only here in America, but worldwide.
Very courageous.
Absolutely very courageous. They don't get the credit they deserve, as far as I'm concerned, as a physician. But Bonnie Castillo is with us. She's a registered nurse. She's the director of NNU, which is National Nurses United, the Registered Nurse Response Network, which is coordinating their own response to Ebola. So without further ado, let's get to our esteemed guest right now. Let me just get her on the line. So Bonnie, welcome to the table.
Thank you.
Good. It's good to have you here. Bonnie, I'm an internal medicine physician, so we can kind of talk healthcare provider to healthcare provider right now.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, so tell us, Bonnie, I just saw there was a poll out, 80, 85% of nurses in this country feel that we're not ready for Ebola. What's up with that?
Well, that's correct. So we've done extensive outreach and surveying of registered nurses across the nation, and the responses are alarming in that the hospitals are not doing enough to prepare in the event that an Ebola patient is admitted to their hospitals. And specifically, you know, what we see happening is, you know, basically a distribution of documents and or paper or reference to a website, the CDC website or World Health Organization website or a combination, as their preparation of the healthcare team, which for us, you know, we recognize in terms of preparing for disaster that actual interactive education and drilling as a team and practicing and that has to be ongoing and 24/7 because it's a 24/7 hospital, and you know, you never know when someone's going to be walking through that door. So you know, when we say the training too, it's really important that we train together from triage, from the front door all the way through the course of treatment in the hospital, to waste disposal. So, we're very alarmed and we are sounding the alarm. We're not going to be silent and we'll be in front of our hospitals demanding what we need. There's also concern with, you know, having enough isolation rooms and also the actual personnel protective equipment, specifically the complete hazmat suit, which is sort of it's a complete coverall with hood and sealed seams.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Look, I agree with you, Bonnie. I mean, just providing a hyperlink does not make a program by any stretch of the imagination. What are you seeing with respect to the response to you protesting, to you basically saying that, look, we don't feel that we're ready, that we do need bona fide training, interactive training, hands-on training where you're actually speaking to people, you're going over protocols, you're practicing protocols. Are hospitals being receptive to, you know, your suggestions?
Unfortunately not. And, you know, with the, you know, I'm sure you heard about the death of the Dallas.
Yes, Thomas Eric Duncan.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, a nurse's aide, you know, has been infected in Spain. And in fact, you know, we've been in contact with nurses unions in other countries, and including in Europe. And, you know, there's an overall concern with the lack of preparedness and readiness and specifically the personnel protective equipment. And so, you know, we're unfortunately what we're seeing, and in fact what we're hearing from the hospitals, is that they are, you know, essentially doing just in time preparation. So they're not, until something hits the front door, they're doing very minimal, as I said, referring people to a link on the website, which is just, you know, insufficient.
But hasn't that failed in the sense that Thomas Eric Duncan, who just died today in the Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, didn't he access the healthcare system there once and was sent home?
Yes, and in fact, you know, that hospital sort of flip-flopped in terms of, you know, at first, you know, blaming the caregivers, and then blaming the hospital record system, which, you know, we actually have great concerns with the overuse of these electronic hospital records, which, you know, are designed essentially to take the place of the expert registered nurse and physician, which, you know, there is no replacement for, you know, a trained expert RN or physician interfacing directly with the patient and individualizing the needs and the care of that patient. So we weren't surprised with that particular, you know, what happened there in terms of that breakdown. We've seen breakdowns with these electronic healthcare record systems repeatedly, and so we you know, unfortunately, when we saw what happened there in Dallas, we realized that there's great potential for that happening elsewhere in the country. And in fact, I don't think any of us can, I mean, other than Emory or, you know, Nebraska, the University of Nebraska, you know, we have great concerns with the rest, you know, the vast majority of hospitals not being prepared.
Let me ask you this, Bonnie, because there's about, to my knowledge, over 6,000 hospitals in this country right now as we speak. Has any of the governmental health agencies interacted and developed a database that you're aware of that lists each and every one of these hospitals and then basically has checklists? Because you talked about all the different aspects of caring for somebody with Ebola, everything from isolation rooms to hazmat suits to how to handle secretions.
Well, you know, what we've seen, I mean, what we have is a privatized healthcare system. So hospitals, you know, this is a private business, and they get to pick and choose, almost like from a drop-down menu, what they're going to do. The CDC and other organizations have issued guidelines, but there's no enforcement mechanism. And the public health across this country, from, you know, county, state, and at the federal levels, have been cut massively to bare bone. You know, nurses laid off, clinics closed. And so while you have that broad issuance of guidelines, there isn't any entity that is out there surveying, enforcing that the hospitals are doing what they need to be doing and adhering to the strictest infectious disease protocols. So that's where we see our role is. You know, we're not going to stay silent. You know, if
sure.
the hospitals aren't prepared, we will be in front of the hospitals and demanding that they get prepared and that we have, you know, everything in place that we need for patients and for the healthcare providers.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And look, like we just mentioned here, obviously the very first case that we've had come to our shores, the hospital system failed miserably.
Right.
I mean, this gentleman slipped right through the cracks, went back into the community, then came back to the hospital, and despite all our modern technology and know-how and wherewithal, he still died.
Right, right. And no one should die. No way. We have the resources in this country. This industry is a very wealthy industry. There is no excuse for us not to be better prepared and to be
Absolutely.
Able to contain and eradicate Ebola.
All right. Well, listen, Bonnie, thank you so much for your time. And if people want to go to your website, what is it?
Yes, they should go to the Registered Nurse Response Network or the National Nurses United.
Okay. Thank you so much, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll be back with your calls after this message.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb broadcasting live from 1480 KPHX here in Phoenix, Arizona. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in. We're going to get to the Freedom Lines right now at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466.
Can I mention something real quick?
Yes, you want to mention something
real quick? You know the Spanish nurse that has Ebola?
Right, the nurse assistant, right, in Madrid.
Yeah, right. They want to kill her dog. Can dogs contract Ebola?
Yeah, I believe. Well, yeah, you can have carriers, absolutely.
It may not get
They think that it crossed over from fruit bats.
Right, I saw that.
That infected fruit bats, and then
They want to execute her dog. They want to put it to sleep.
Well, why can't they just quarantine it like everybody
else?
I don't know.
I have
six
up in
dogs. I would not just execute the
dog.
You
have six dogs now?
We have six dogs now. Although I got bit by my little Chihuahua.
I have a scar right here.
Ago.
I got bit by a dog about 8 weeks ago.
Yeah, my little Chihuahua. You've seen, you know, little Peppermint Patty. She's got one eye. You know. Basically, half of her teeth are missing because...
I may have seen her briefly.
No. Well, we got her through there was the Arizona Humane Society, and they had this big event, this fundraising event, and they had like eight dogs that they...
Free, you know, one-eyed dogs?
Well, no. They parade them around, and you have to put a raffle ticket in, and then whoever wins it, you know, gets that particular dog. So we went into this raffle, won the dog, and it's a sad story because the dog was found, I think, when it was like 2 months old or something, and I don't know if she had escaped from the house or somebody just let her go and didn't want it anymore. But she got hit by a car, and when she got hit by the car, she ended up in the doggy ICU, actually, and she had broken her jaw, her orbit, and so they had to extract the eye because it just was not salvageable, and they had to extract a bunch of teeth. They even put a little feeding tube in her, a little doggy feeding tube for a few months because she couldn't eat. So anyway, so everyone felt really sorry for this dog, and there was a lot of emotion, but we won it through the raffle. But 6 pounds of hell, fire, and fury. I mean, this dog... just rules the roost, Eric.
Right?
Those are, yeah. Little white Chihuahua.
They're nasty little dogs.
Oh, my lordy. No fear. No fear at all. But my concern is that she's 6 pounds, and then she fights with another Chihuahua that we had, who really is a hunter. This Chihuahua actually caught and killed a rabbit in our backyard and knew exactly where to go for the throat and hold it there. And I felt so bad because
Instinct.
It's instinct. I remember there was all six of them chasing the rabbit around the backyard, howling, the beagles and whatnot, and... unfortunately for the rabbit, it tried to run out through a little hole in the concrete and almost made it. I was trying to scare my dogs off, but my little one, Sally, she actually got the rabbit and had it in her jaws. And it's so sad because I saw the rabbit's eyes and just looked like it knew it was, you know, her time was over. So the rabbit was still breathing a little bit, but ultimately it passed away. But this is what I get scared
about. You didn't kill it?
Did I euthanize it?
Put it out of its misery? That's what I did when my dog caught one and didn't kill it all the way.
I can't kill something.
I don't like it either, but I would rather kill it than watch it suffer.
I know. Well, I think it was going pretty quickly. But in any case, my point is the dog, Sally, knows how to kill and knows how to bite like that. So, but Peppers, Peppermint Patty, they're all named after the penis, as you can see a trend here. But they were fighting about 2 weeks ago.
You have a Linus? Oh, yeah, you do have a Linus.
We do. I have Emerson Linus, too. That's the old dog. That's the rescue one. Like, he's 13 right. years old, who still gets on top of the tables.
Is that the one that got picked up by a coyote?
No, that was Charlie.
Charlie.
Yeah, Charlie was almost executed by the coyote. But any case, I know, all these stories. But I'll get back to the calls in a quick second. But just to finish up the story with Patty. So Patty was fighting with Sally, and I got nervous because she really was, like, nipping at her. And I was afraid Sally was going to turn around and just bite her and kill her. I mean, she's only 6 pounds, this dog. So I went in and grabbed, you know, Peppermint Patty away,
and
she bit me. I'm trying to save her. So, but fortunately, because she only has like 6 teeth and stuff like that, it wasn't too
serious.
She
gummed you.
Yeah, but she punctured me. I mean, I had a little puncture wound right here, and you know, between my thumb and my index finger, and it took about a week or two to heal. But you know, that's part of the deal.
Physician, heal thyself.
Physician, heal myself. Any case, let me get back to the callers right now, and let's go first to, let's see who's been holding the longest. We got, let's go to Ann. Ann's calling in from Bellingham, Washington. Ann, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Dr. Mike. I wanted to talk to you about the drugs for E. coli or for Ebola, and I'm wondering if the pharmaceutical companies don't put precedent on drugs for that because it's not profitable.
Well, it depends. I mean, first and foremost, right now, there are no antiviral drugs that we're aware of that can actually cure Ebola. So I know there's lots of experimental activity going on, even vaccines that are being tried. But you're probably right. If there's not a huge market for the drug, then they're not going to expend all that money on research and development to try to develop an effective vaccine or an effective antiviral drug. But if they see an opportunity, like I said, if it gets now to over 1 million people in Africa, if it starts spreading here in the United States, then obviously I think they would see that as a quote-unquote business opportunity to develop something like that. Just like HIV. Early on, HIV, you know, quite frankly, because it was confined at least initially to the homosexual community, people weren't doing anything about it. I mean, you remember President Reagan. There was just this whole laissez-faire. But then once it sort of penetrated the heterosexual population and started to become more widespread, that's when you saw a lot of companies start jumping in and, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how do we cure this or how do we get some effective therapy. So, yeah, unfortunately, in modern-day capitalism, that's the way it works. If there's not a market for something, then they're not going to go out there and develop it. So good question, Ann. Appreciate the call. Thank you so much.
One more thing.
Yes.
About I think it's basically the doctors, not the nurses. But in my county and mm-hmm. 2 counties down, I cannot sue for malpractice. And if I go down to Seattle, there's a possibility, but most likely no one would take it. So right now, physicians are above the law.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that particular law, but, you know, if there is some malfeasance or something that's done that's not ethical, not right, or just an egregious error, and someone suffers harm from that, then I think anyone in this country, whether it's a medical malpractice suit or personal injury, you should always have a right to seek redress and justice. So I don't get that. So I don't think I'm a doctor, but I don't think anybody is above the law. So, okay, listen, I appreciate the call. Let me give you the phone number, 1-866-987-THOM. Again, that's 1-866-987-8466. We're going to get back with your calls here in a quick second. And Eric, just as a follow-up to that story with my dog, last night, because they all sleep in the bed, the beagle tried to walk down under the covers, got the Peppermint Patty upset, and she nipped me again. I got a second nip. It wasn't as bad as the first one, but there you have it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today. Let's get back to the Freedom Lines at 1-866-987-THOM. First up in the queue is Lynn. Lynn calling from Rockford, Illinois. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, Dr. Mike. How are you doing today?
Hey, every day's a blessing. Every day's a blessing, right?
Absolutely. I just had a question. The gentleman that just passed away in Texas that had Ebola.
Thomas Eric Dunn.
Okay, so Thomas.
Duncan.
Duncan, I mean. Yes.
Duncan. Okay, Thomas Duncan. Remember the two doctors, I think they were, that had come from Africa home who were sick and who were treated in the United States?
Correct.
And both came through it okay?
Yeah, my understanding is that we have had several individuals that were brought from another land to here, and then they were treated. Now, I don't know specifically what treatments were rendered, because the only thing that you can do with Ebola is what's called supportive care. And what I mean by supportive care is that Ebola can affect all of the different organs in your body. It can affect the liver. It can affect your kidneys. It can affect your skin. And the only thing that we can do is to provide fluids. If somebody becomes dehydrated, if they start hemorrhaging, because it's also known as hemorrhagic fever, and you can start vomiting up blood from your gastrointestinal tract, you can have some significant bleeding. So you'd have to replace that with a blood transfusion. Sometimes they have difficulty with clotting. You'd have to use clotting factors and different things along those lines. So all we can do is support the vital functions and hope that the body heals itself over time. Now, I did hear that they were trying to use some experimental vaccines and that these had not been released to the public at large, and whether or not they got those and those were effective or not remains to be seen. But to date, there really is nothing other than supportive care that we can do for these patients at this particular time.
I thought I had heard when those doctors were involved with it that they were given.
They might have been. They might have been. But again, we have a very stringent process here in the United States whereby if you want to bring a new drug to market with the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, you have to go through lots of hoops to make sure that by the time that drug is put out there on a mass scale, that it's completely safe, it's been tested, they've done, you know, multiple sort of research and experiments and looking at, you know, these particular drugs through trials, drug trials, to see if they're safe, if they're effective, and if they pose any adverse effects with respect to the public at large. So, and that's usually a long process too. That can take from years to sometimes decades from concept to actually finishing up a drug and producing it. So with the Ebola virus, we just don't have that right now. And they could have very well used something experimental, but we don't know, and I don't think they will release whether or not it was effective or not. So, but listen, I appreciate the call. Definitely a good question there. So let's go to some more of the callers.
Until recently, there was really no demand for an Ebola drug.
No, and that's what we were talking
about
earlier.
So why develop it?
Yeah, so they're not going to develop it if there's no – but see, this is the thing, Eric. You know, when I went into medicine, when I was a young kid, I honestly did not go into medicine because I thought, boy, I'm going to become rich. I'm going to make a lot of money and, you know, have all this glory as a doctor. I went into medicine because I just was fascinated with the human body. I was fascinated with, you know, this whole universe that exists at the molecular level. I mean, you can think of space, right? Space has got all this vast territory, you know, millions of light years away. It's just so unfathomable to think about the concept of space and its vastness. But you could do the opposite. You could think about the vastness of the micromolecular world, of the vastness of a chromosome or of an atom or of a cell and what's inside a cell. That's what really got me excited as a kid. And then one of the things I considered going into was research, because I just thought, boy, wouldn't, you know, look, we all have dreams of, you know, want to cure cancer as a kid or something. Well, maybe not all kids, but, you know, at least I was thinking about that. But the thing is, I was excited about just the sheer research aspect of it and the fact that, hey, I could do something, find it intellectually challenging, find it as a personal goal to be very competitive and go out there and discover something that no one else did for the sheer joy of doing it. But in today's modern world, particularly in our modern capitalistic world, people, like you said, Eric, only do things if there's a quote-unquote market for it. You know,
and
if there's no market or profit, then, you know, who cares if it helps the public? Who cares if it saves somebody from Ebola?
If there's only 10 people who need it, we're not going to bother.
Yeah, but my point is this. It might only be 10 people now, but the research itself might shine light into something, some other aspect of that virus, right? Or how do we treat viruses in general? And then that knowledge could be shared with the public at large. But when you have a privatized healthcare system, any of that knowledge that people accumulate They want to keep it to themselves. They don't want to share that. They want to keep it all to themselves.
It's not a cure. It's a trade secret.
Right. It's a trade secret at that point. I mean, look, it's even like our own genome, you know, our own genetic. Everybody has chromosomes and genes, and the government funded a project for us to discover the genetic makeup, all the codes, right? The whole dictionary of the genetic code. And now you have drug companies and other people laying claim to the genetic code and patenting and trademarking like certain parts of our genetic code.
Like Monsanto did with plants.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's absolutely insane. So I would love to see a world order in my lifetime, Eric, where we get back to this fellowship of mankind, this humanity of brotherhood and sisterhood, where we're all in this together. And that research and development, you know, at the scientific level should not be solely predicated on how much money can I make? How much of a market is there for this? I mean, I forget who his name was. I'll look it up later. But there was this one scientist who came up with, like, vaccines. You can probably look him up. He came up with, like, 30 vaccines for, like, hepatitis. He came up with the vaccine, you know, for various different illnesses. And you know what he did with that? He donated his knowledge, his know-how, his wherewithal
right
to the scientific community. He said, look, I don't want to make money off of this. If I could do this and discover something and have that energy and that excitement of discovery, just like you're Christopher Columbus back in the day, or, you know, some other great explorer. Well, I wouldn't call him a great explorer because he
was vicious.
He was vicious. Yeah. Take that off whatever. John Glenn going up to the moon. That's a better analogy.
There you go.
Yeah. Cause he was a pig, Neil Christopher Armstrong. Columbus. He was absolutely horrible. But if people would use that temperament, that idea that, you know, I want to go out there and help people and I don't care if I'm going to make money from that, that would be just an amazing thing to see in our world. And if we could use the collective genius of mankind, rather than looking at everybody as an enemy, rather than looking at everybody, you know, you're either with us or you're against us. You're either conservative or you're liberal. Either you're a Democrat or a Republican. You're either a believer or you're an atheist. You know, your religion is better than my religion. You know, we need to get away from this dichotomy of pitting one against another, brother against sister, you know, man against woman. And if we could live in harmony and harness that collective genius and stop spending money on ridiculous things like in America, where we have a military budget that is so bloated that we spend hundreds and hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars just on the military in this country. And think about it. Like I told you earlier, these plagues, look, it's no one saying that Ebola is the flu of 1918 or is it the bubonic plague of the medieval days. But when you look at those plagues and what they've done, Eric, they've killed more people in those two plagues alone than any – if you took all the world wars through the history of mankind, added up all the deaths in all those wars, I would guarantee you those two plagues have killed more people than all the wars in the history of mankind.
Oh, yeah. Hey, were you talking about Dr. Houghton?
Yes, I think that's his name, Dr. Houghton. He developed, like, dozens, right, of vaccines, I'm pretty sure. But that's my whole point. Why can't we get back to a world like that? I mean, for instance, you know, we're looking at Iran. Iran is, you know, some people say a hotbed of terrorism and this and that, or Iraq. But, you know, at one point or another, those countries, Eric, were the seats of civilization. They had great scientists, astronomers, you know, poets, things like that. Imagine if instead of looking at Iran as some country that's going to bomb us or kill us, or looking at everybody in the Middle East as like, you know, they're going to behead us and that, you know, they're threatening us. It would be a wonderful world order. Look, and maybe this is where I am a bleeding heart liberal, but it would be a wonderful world order if we could take those best minds. Going back to almost what Fred Duvall was saying about intellectual capital and education, if education was not only here in Arizona in a governor's race, the top topic, imagine if education was that topic worldwide, and now we're working with Iran, we're working with North Korea, we're working with Iraq, we're working with Syria, all these countries that, you know, President Bush might have considered an axis of evil, but now we're collaborating together as a fellowship in humanity and getting their best minds, their best scientists, their intellectual capital, marrying them up to our best scientists, our intellectual capital, our ideas, and then exchange those ideas in a worldwide exchange. Imagine what the human species could do. We could fight climate change. We could beat climate change. We could advance our civilization. We can rid this world of disease, of suffering. We can rid the world of poverty. We can create sustainable energy resources. I mean, there's just so many things that we could do if we just got beyond the silliness of pitting, you know, one against the other. And to me, Eric, that ultimately is what I really feel what liberalism is about, what progressivism is about. It's about looking at the world as we see it. And, you know, what was it, Kennedy? I think Robert Kennedy said some men see things as they are and ask why. I see things as they're not and say, why not? You know, and to me, that is a very, very powerful statement. And if we can get to a world that looks at us like that, don't say why, and not come up with an answer. Say why not and make it happen. So look, I digress, but when we get back here, we still got the full board of callers right now. So we got Vince on the line. We got people from South Carolina, Texas, Idaho, California, Minnesota, Colorado, Arizona. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Like John Lennon said, imagine. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. This is the special time of the day where we go to Talk Radio News Service and Ellen Ratner. So, Ellen, welcome.
Well, thank you so much. Lots going on. First of all, Justice Kennedy, which we're kind of shocked about because he's generally been pretty good on gay issues, he struck down the same-sex marriage bans in both Idaho and, yesterday they struck down the same-sex marriage bans in Idaho and Nevada. But today, the state of Idaho filed a request for the Supreme Court to issue a stay in the ruling, and Justice Kennedy went with it. Quite shocking, actually.
Right. Now, what does that mean for the other, like, 28 states that have gay marriage already?
Well, unless they're issued a stay of execution, the ruling, then they can go on and do gay marriage. Okay. So this will be kind of interesting to see what happens because the Ninth Circuit is traditionally a pretty liberal circuit.
Right, right. But the bottom line is, Ellen, that we now have potentially 30 states, the majority, almost 60% of the states in this country that will have some form of legalized gay marriage, correct?
That's correct.
Wow.
And, you know, I think it's over in the long run, particularly as young people think that the old people are totally ridiculous on this issue.
Sure.
So that's what I think is going to happen.
All right, what else we got?
Okay, well, there's actually quite a bit of news. Eric Duncan, as you know, died at, everybody's been talking about it, 7:51 this morning. But what is going to probably happen is that there is going to be security now increased at 5 U.S. airports. These are obviously the airports where they get a lot of international traffic. And he was in critical condition. As you know, the hospital sent him home. And the World Health Organization has said that the Ebola has led to the death of more than 34,000 people in his area.
Well, 34,000 or 3,400?
I'm sorry, 3,400. Okay. I'm not even reading my own writing correctly. All sorry right. about that. With 7,400 people being infected, and, of course, at least half of those will die, maybe as much as 90%,
sure,
depending on where they are and whether there's any treatment. Okay. Then also today, Secretary Kerry met in Washington with his British counterpart, Philip Hammond. He said the two countries are united in stopping terror, but against there seems to not be a whole lot of pushback from Kobani, certainly no pushback from Turkey, which has signed Article 5 of the agreement, of the NATO agreement. Now, what happens if they go over the line and into Turkey, then NATO, by Article 5, must act immediately. The question is, are the strikes, you know, too little? And are they, you know, some people think that we shouldn't do them at all. So there is certainly some debate about that. And it has not helped that the former CIA director has come out with his book really excoriating the president and taking the fact that Hillary Clinton, he says, supported his position. This is Leon Panetta.
Sure, sure. So, what's the Syrian government? What's their take on these strikes? even inside Syria.
The Syrian government is actually in favor of it because if they can get rid of this group, then that means that they're in a much stronger position. They don't have to fight them. They can fight the Free Syrian Army, which is a much more moderate group.
Right.
And so the Syrian government is looking forward to that. Now, that's why a lot of people say, hey, we ought to just not be dealing with this.
Sure.
But, you know, there's certainly a lot of debate. There's certainly a lot of debate as to whether we're finishing George Bush's work for him. It's a dicey situation.
Absolutely. Okay. What else we got, Ellen?
Okay. The United Nations has issued a report in the ceasefire deaths in Ukraine. And they said, despite the fact that there has been a September 5th ceasefire, more than 300 civilians have been killed in the country. And they say that it's actually 331 at this point. And they're saying that the ceasefire is a welcome step. And they're not saying as to which side is causing this. They're just saying that the deaths have occurred since the ceasefire.
Okay.
And that's the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. Last but not least on my list is the CDC has issued statistics on suicide and the biggest killers as well as life expectancy. They have said, this is the Centers for Disease Control Prevention branch. They mm-hmm. said the suicide rate was the highest since 1986 when it was almost 13%. It's now 12.6%. The economy could be one reason, but there have been times when it was high and the economy was good.
Wow. So what you're saying, let me ask you a quick question. So of all the deaths that they tabulate, they're saying that 12.6% of deaths are suicide?
No, out of 100,000 people, the suicide rate is 12.6%.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I was going to say, because that would be
right.
Disturbing.
Right.
It's disturbing even with 12.6 out of 100,000, but okay.
Exactly. It's very disturbing. They're also saying that heart disease is still our biggest killer, but it's going down. Cancer is up. People have stopped smoking, and that's why they think heart disease has gone down, although they wouldn't say about pollution, but it's clearly causing the rise in cancer, in my humble opinion. They
sure.
also said a child born in 2012 can expect to live 78.9 years. And 100 years ago, life expectancy was only 46 years.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty good progress. You know, I've seen some things, Ellen, these futuristic projections that they're saying once we're able to start cloning cells and replacing your body's tissues and whatnot, some of these futurists are saying that life expectancy literally could be in the hundreds of years.
Wow.
So
I'm not sure I want to live that long.
Well, that would be that'll be a nice long gig with Talk Radio News Service.
Exactly.
Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, Ellen, we appreciate the updates on everything that's happening nationwide and also internationally.
You got it.
All right. There you have it. Ellen Ratner with Talk Radio News Service, and appreciate her call as always, getting us up to date on everything here. And listen, I think at the next hour, Eric, we're going bareback. I don't think we're going to have any more guests for the rest of the day. So that allows us to open up the Freedom Lines and talk to the listeners and hear what they have to say. And we'll talk about any topic that you want to talk about. We have plenty of callers right now. Let me give you the number for those Freedom Lines. It's 1-866-987-THOM. Again, that's 1-866-987-8466. So just definitely give us a call. We'll get all of your calls in during this next hour for sure. So I'm excited to do that, and stay with us.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting here today for Tom. Appreciate the opportunity. Also, hour number three, and we're going to go to the Freedom Express right now. Your calls. I do not believe we have any guests for the remainder of the hour, Eric, so it's always fun to just open up the phone lines and let people weigh in with their thoughts, right?
Yep, sure.
Absolutely. All right, 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's go first to Jim. Actually, no, I think Jim is next. Bob from Palm Springs, California. Bob,
It's where my parents live.
Oh, very nice. How you doing here, Bob?
Hi. Yeah, Palm Springs, California. You know, there's not only a lunar eclipse coming, but we got an eclipse of Endero 68 brought in by President Obama on the backs of the illegal kids from Central America, spread through hundreds of kids in 42 states around this country, and Eli Waller, a four-year-old little Jewish triplet in New Jersey, was the first victim to be killed by President Obama's illegal importation of these people. And this scare about Ebola, I think, is really being used as sort of a smokescreen to cover the intent of the people and the children of the United States of America by this criminal military dictator in the White House who is out of control and is destroying this country and is planning to infect our military in Africa. Why can't we set up isolation tents in the Sahara, treat people there? To bring people into this country is not only, it is Barack insane Obama, but traitor Obama.
Now, Bob, let me ask you a question. I don't have a license to practice in California, but I would just, as a physician, weigh in with your thoughts there and recommend, have you seen a psychiatrist lately for your paranoia? Because I'm a little concerned that there could be some schizophrenia or some type of personality disorder that you're experiencing.
No, doctor, I'm on good. I'm on good medical marijuana, and I can see.
Are you under treatment, Bob?
And is Tom Hartman blaming the mafia for the murder of President Kennedy instead of the CIA? Tom Hartman is CIA, and the
Tom,
CIA behind.
I mean, Bob.
And we've got to repeal the National Security Act in 1947.
Bob,
get rid of the damn CIA.
You need
get rid of this lousy, stinking bastard.
Wow.
I guess another
Fox News watcher.
Yeah, I was going to try to help him, but I don't know if they cut him off or not. I mean,
yeah, I think he was getting ready to start cussing.
I think he got, all right, well, I was going to ask Bob if he's on his medicines. I mean, I was going to try to walk him through kind of some different medicines that he could take for his paranoia. But
I'm wondering, let me get this straight. What he was saying was Obama invited all these kids up from South America?
To be vectors of transmissions for diseases.
Right.
And the enterovirus 68.
And Ebola is just a smokescreen to make everyone not pay attention to all the little children that Obama are inviting up.
I was surprised that he said that Obama, since he was born in Africa, didn't bring it over himself.
Right.
I mean, he could have gone with that one.
Yeah, he could have easily taken
it. He could have
easily
said, like, look, Obama brought it from Africa, and he's just been harboring it for, like, how old is Obama, 50-something years old?
I guess he's got to work on his paranoia a little better.
Yeah, no, his paranoia is not, I think, where it really could be. But okay, we'll see. Look, that's what happens when you open up the phone lines. Anything could happen. All right, 866-987-THOM. That's 866-987-8466. Let's see who's next in the queue. I think we got Vince on the line from KTNF. Vince, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. Regarding the Ebola situation down in Texas, this poor guy who came in from Liberia, Mr. Duncan, he died. You know, it's very unfortunate that he passed away. And the question that I have for you, a lady earlier asked that question, the medical doctor and the nurse who were providing services to Ebola patients in Liberia, they were evacuated to the United States and they arrived on stretchers.
Right.
And they received medication and they got better. And the question that I have is, why is it that the same therapy wasn't provided to Mr. Duncan? And I'm sure a lot of people are asking the same question, and
right.
tried to answer the question earlier, but the theory I have is that I'm afraid there's a theory that I have that has no proof for it, is I believe there's some kind of politics. I cannot put a pin to it. There is something that is so disturbing with this picture. I'm sure some people are going to question the fact that he didn't get the same treatment that the other people got. This there's an NBC photojournalist who is presently right now in Nebraska receiving treatment. We
hope
and pray that he recovers. And I think he will recover. And then the question will be is there some kind of selective treatment?
I'm afraid to say that.
I have no proof, but I'm just afraid. It's so concerning to me, and I believe so many others as well.
Yeah, well, look, let's put it this way. It's very, very hard to make that assumption. It's an assumption, okay? But the bottom line is that this guy obviously contracted the virus in Africa, Then he went over, you know, a long plane flight, then tried to access the healthcare system, was turned away, and then came back only after he was critically ill, basically. So I guess the difference here is, that I'm saying is that this patient from Africa, Mr. Duncan, Vince, he came, he got missed in the system, and then at that point the virus had taken over his body. So even if you give state-of-the-art care, at that point it was almost a done deal. It almost would have been miraculous for him to recover. Versus the photojournalists and the other ones, they were identified early on in the process. They recognized what the symptoms were, and they got them immediate treatment and then sent him back to the United States to get immediate treatment. So I think this guy lost too much time is what happened there. I hear what you're saying. Look, they're already making it a political football. I remember Obama had wanted some type of relief fund, you know, tens of millions of dollars for this Ebola virus and a potential outbreak, and the Republicans have always consistently said, no, 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 it's just a slush fund. We don't want to fund it. So if you want to make it about politics, what I would say is that for sure – the Democrats and Obama want everyone to have access to health care so that they can get timely treatment and have no delays, because in this particular case with Mr. Duncan, there was a delay in treatment. There was a major delay in treatment, and as a consequence, he's dead now. So if there's anything to take home from this, and if you want to pivot on this, I would say there is a big difference between Democrats and Republicans. There is a big difference between progressives and liberals when it comes to how do we view the healthcare system, you know, as a whole. I mean, let's face it, you know, Obamacare was meant so that everybody across this country can get access to healthcare so that they can get affordable healthcare. I mean, there's going to be people in this country, say you did contract the Ebola virus, Eric, there's going to be people out there who got,
let's not,
you know, but they're going to say they're at home. I don't have insurance, you know. Right now, I'm hemorrhaging. I got sore throat. I got muscle aches. My body's shutting down. And they're going to be fearful to go to the emergency room because they're going to think, oh, this could bankrupt me. I mean, this happens. There's many people in this country who don't access health care because they're
If somebody's hemorrhaging, you don't think they're going to make it to the hospital?
Dude, I have seen incredible cases where people don't. I've literally where people have been pooping blood and they just don't access the healthcare system. They think it's going to go away. But a lot of times people are fearful of that.
I have to admit, 2 years ago when I fell ill and I called you that morning.
Yeah.
And you're saying go to the hospital.
Right.
And I sat there going, no, I'm not going to the hospital.
I know. You tell me you're lying down and you said your abdomen was rigid like a board. I'm like, Eric, get to the hospital now. And
I didn't want to go.
You didn't want to go. So you're a prime example of people, you know, waiting to the last minute because of fear for financial repercussions if you don't have health insurance. All right, well, listen, anyway, good question. Let's get to some of the other callers here right now. Let's try, let's see, who's been up the longest? I don't know what this is about, a fast diet, but Jim's been holding for almost 2 hours. So, Jim, what's happening?
Yeah, we talked last time about the fast diet, 5-2 mm-hmm. diet.
Oh, right.
I was wondering if you ever got a chance to talk to Tom about it.
I did not speak to Tom about it, but I did look it up. I did remember after you talked to me. I do distinctly remember looking it up on the internet. So
I will
definitely talk to Tom about it. I apologize, but we're up against a break right now. So let me give you the Freedom Line number here. It's 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. And we'll be back with your calls from Illinois, Texas, Virginia, Minnesota, New York City, Tucson, Arizona.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, broadcasting from 1480 KPHX, Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today. Listen, before I get back to the callers, too, I want to give you just a little bit of information because many people are starting to talk about a little conspiracy theories, Eric, and this and that. But let me just give you some.
Like you're an armchair doctor?
Like I'm an armchair doctor, yes. But let me just give you some of the actual statistics that we have to date on the prognosis of Ebola. I mean, it has a very high mortality rate, but it ranges, okay? The mortality rate is anywhere between 25% to 90%, Okay, so it depends on where you are, right? It depends which country you are, which part of the world you're from. So you can have as low as 25%, which means one out of four cases die, three out of four make it. Or you can have a 90% mortality, which means 9 out of every 10 people get it, die, and only 1 out of 10 actually survive. So this information is as recent as September. So last month, 2014, from the World Health Organization, WHO, and overall, if you average it all out, it's about 50%. But again, the big difference is where are you at that particular time? Because if you're here in America, or if you happen to be maybe in Europe that has state-of-the-art medical treatment facilities, they say that early treatment, supportive treatment, IV hydration, intravenous hydration, supporting the body's functions, the main organs, that can significantly reduce the fatality rate and the mortality rate of Ebola. But if you're outside of those systems, then obviously, and you don't get the supportive care, death could almost be a near certitude.
Unless they send you home with an aspirin.
Right, absolutely.
Like they did with Mr. Duncan.
So some people get it and they recover quickly and completely. Others, if it's a prolonged case, more likelihood you're going to die. And then if you do survive, there are circumstances where people have long-term sequelae or consequences of the primary Ebola infection, which include you can get inflammation of many parts of your body, your testicles, your joints, you can get muscle pains, your skin could peel off, you can lose your hair, you can become blind. So there's a lot of different things that can happen. And like I told you earlier, that even after you've sort of rid yourself, so to speak, of the acute initial manifestations of the disease, it could survive the virus in your semen for up to 7 weeks, which means that even after you think you're clear and you have sexual intercourse for that ensuing 7 weeks, you could be infecting somebody else through your semen, even though at that point you feel as though you're completely healthy and have recovered. So it's really a devastating disease. It's a fascinating disease, but nonetheless has the potential to cause a lot more harm if we don't all work together in concert, like we talked to Bonnie Castillo earlier, one of the nurses on the front lines. 85% of the nurses right now that were surveyed feel as though we do not have the proper protocols in place as far as contact isolation, how to handle body secretions, fluids, how to use the hazmat suits, isolation rooms, I mean, you name it. So the jury's still out, and obviously as each day goes by, we'll learn more and more about this illness, and we'll learn more and more about the preparedness of the United States in particular and our healthcare system to make sure that we contain this disease and it doesn't become more widespread than it already is. Eric?
Do you believe do you think that there's going to be more cases in the U.S.?
At this point, I think so, yes. I don't know how many, but based off of what I'm seeing and based off of what I know of the healthcare system, now that it has landed on our shores, sure. I mean, look at the first case that we saw, Eric. I mean, the first case, a guy was a classic case, if you will. He came from one of the prime areas, you know, where it's basically exploding right now, and the hospital staff didn't even apparently question him about his travel, or if they did, they ignored it and didn't say anything. I mean, if the guy came from one of the areas where it's epidemic, I mean, that's a huge red flag, and immediately should be contained. So the first case that we had was a failed case. So the jury's out. What remains to be seen.
Do you think at this point that the hospitals, if somebody comes in and says, I feel like I have the flu, should be testing immediately for Ebola?
No, but if they come from an area that it's endemic to. So if you come from Liberia, Monrovia.
What if you were in contact with Tom Eric Duncan? Was that his name?
Well, yeah, and if you become in contact with those people, then absolutely. Yeah, those people are going to be quarantined.
Yeah, I think they should be testing everyone.
No. Well, any case, let's get back to the callers. Let's see who's up next in the queue. Let's go to Rick. He's on the line from WCPT in Chicago, Illinois. Rick, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good afternoon. I'm definitely not a conspiracy theorist or anybody who's concerned too much about things, but I mean, and it's not Obama's fault that 100,000, you know, undocumented aliens come into America, but couldn't they bring with them, you know, all sorts of diseases we don't know anything about? I mean, the enterovirus that has sickened so many children in this country and killed one of them. I mean,
why would you think? Let me ask you this, Rick. What anybody could bring a disease in the country. Why are you singling out the so-called aliens, the 100,000 aliens, as though they're extraterrestrials, and they come in and that they can bring in more diseases than anybody else? You had this guy Duncan who died, who, you know, was coming out here to find love and get married, and he brought a disease, and he came over legally, you know, through the airport, et cetera. So why are you saying these 100,000 so-called aliens are somehow, you know, a graver threat, like, you know, they're extraterrestrials coming to, you know, kill Mother Earth? I mean, well, I don't understand your thinking.
Well, don't get hysterical. I mean, alien is a word that's been around for a long time when it comes to somebody that's coming to this country who's undocumented.
We use undocumented here in Arizona.
Person, undocumented immigrant, traveler, whatever you want to call them is fine with me. But the fact of the matter is you have all of these children being put into elementary schools all over the country, and then all of a sudden you have this weird, freaky, upper respiratory disease that's taking over the schools.
There's been no evidence, Rick. There's been no evidence that I am aware of that says that these weird illnesses you're calling are a direct result of our immigration policy or because of the 100,000 aliens that you said. I mean, you're basically fanning the flames of ignorance, and what you're saying has no basis in scientific fact.
I'm not trying to be ignorant. I'm trying to overcome ignorance. That's why I called you. But I mean, is there not concern when you have a bunch of people all of a sudden that have never had vaccinations, that have never had any kind
That's
of...
That's not true.
They get more vaccinations over there in those countries because they have access to public health. That's what I'm telling you, Rick. I mean, you are fanning the flames of ignorance and trying to get people to discriminate against a population of patients. Anyway, look, we're up against the break, but that's what the Freedom Lines are about. We give everybody an opportunity to have their say here on the Tom Hartman Program. 1-866-987-THOM.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, broadcasting from 1480 KPHX, live here in Phoenix, Arizona, a progressive oasis in the desert. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting here for Tom, and we're going to continue with the Freedom Lines right now. Let me go to one of the next callers here, Eric, and let's just go to, I like to go in priority, let's go to Tom. Tom's been listening for quite some time on hold in Tucson, Arizona. Tom, welcome.
Well, thank you, Dr. Mike. Dr. Mike, do you think that by this time next year that Ebola will still be on the nightly news?
Look, that's hard to say. It really depends on what the natural evolution of the epidemic is. I mean, if we are able to effectively treat people, if we're able to get access to health care in a timely manner, if those who are infected are quarantined and processed the way they're supposed to be processed, then I would think that you would not be hearing about it. Now, on the flip side of that, if we don't do our due diligence, as Bonnie Castillo, one of the nurses who we had on earlier, said that we're not prepared, that if the hospitals just have hyperlinks about what to do if it happens and then they become reactive rather than proactive, that could be troublesome because with epidemics, you can't be – the worst thing to do in an epidemic is to be reactive, is to wait till it hits and then try to contain it. You have to prevent it or curtail it when you first find out that it is occurring. And that's, I think, the main issue that – remains to be seen yet, is that how will our healthcare system respond to such a challenge? So I don't know. It remains to be seen.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. All right, let's go back to some of the other callers here. Before I do that, Eric, I want to actually just also tell people, because there's different aspects of this illness that people need to get to understand about the symptoms. So I just want to give a few more quick facts on the illness, and then we'll get to the callers. But the symptoms, because we keep talking about these symptoms, and you're saying, hey, shouldn't we test everybody?
If they come in with a fever?
But here's the problem, is that it acts like influenza. The bottom line, and influenza, which is also known as the flu, influenza, that's the F-L-U part of influenza, is very subjective sometimes, very nondescript with respect to your symptoms. So headache, right? You get headaches is a very common symptom, but you can get that with the flu, and you can get that with Ebola. You can get fever, again, a very common symptom, also common with the flu. Tiredness, fatigue, just not feeling like you got energy. Joint pains, muscle aches, some vague abdominal discomfort. These are all signs that you've been infected, at least initially, with Ebola. And again, it's not really something that you can say, oh, this is specific to Ebola. This is something that's specific to a lot of viral infections. Those things I just mentioned now could be HIV infection, could be a flu infection, it could be an Ebola infection. But you also start to see loss of appetite, vomiting, diarrhea, again, very common symptoms, okay? Now, the average time from the time that you actually contract the infection, you're exposed to it and you get the infection, until the start of those symptoms that we just talked about, that's called, Eric, the incubation period, okay? So you're incubating it. You know, you've been exposed. The virus now is in your system. It's in your blood. It's traveling around in your body, but you don't know it.
You're making it sound even worse than it is.
Well, no, but I'm just telling that so people understand the facts of the case. So the incubation period can be anywhere from 8 to 10 days on average. But again, that varies too, because it could go as low as 2 days. So in other words, you got infected today. Today's Thursday. You can have symptoms starting on Saturday. And that can go as far out as 21 days. So on average, 8 to 10 days, but could be anywhere from 2 to 21. So you see there's a wide sort of latitude of variability there. Then you can get skin problems. You can get rashes in up about 50% of the cases, okay? In 40 to 50% of the cases, you get this bleeding. This is where it gets known as the hemorrhagic fever, hemorrhage. Everyone knows the word hemorrhage. It's when you start bleeding, when you're just bleeding all over the place. That's a hemorrhage. You can get hemorrhagic fever, and then you could start bleeding from puncture sites. If you've actually had needles injected there, you can actually start bleeding from those puncture sites. Mucous membranes, which include, you know, anything from the nose. You can bleed from the gastrointestinal tract.
Can't you bleed from your eyes and stuff?
Well, the gums, you can, the vagina, any mucosal membranes can bleed it. I think you can get retinized, okay, and subcutaneous bleeding, but it's not like your eyes are bursting like in the horror movies or something like that. That's not what it causes. But you can get bloody vomit, red eyes, and then you can start getting little spots under your skin. They're called petechiae. It's little blood vessels and purpura that are actually bleeding inside the skin, and also hematomas. So those are kind of what you see in general. And the prognosis, like I said, really depends on how soon you get treated. But if the patient who gets infected, say, doesn't get better, and then other body organs start failing, the kidney, the liver, lungs, whatever, then death can occur usually between 7 to 16 days, but on average 8 to 9 days after you first get your symptoms. So that just gives you some of the facts that you can then put into the context when you're hearing a lot of the media, a lot of the reports about Ebola. It's very important to talk about it from the basis of facts and evidence-based science and not from hysteria, okay? So that being said, let's go next to Cheryl. Cheryl's on the line from Palm Springs again, Eric, from KPTR, and she wants to sort of take issue with one of her neighbors. What's up, Cheryl?
Hi, Dr. Mike. This is Cheryl. Bob is way off. He's a minority here. When people listen, you know, and they hear these towns, they might get the impression that we're all like that, but we're not. And I want them to take heart that they call my town God's waiting room, God's little waiting room for a reason. So if everybody just waits around long enough, you know, racist, old white and racist is going to eventually go the natural way. But we're not like that.
Sure.
We read science. We do realize that and I'm going to probably say it wrong, the enterovirus.
Enterovirus, correct.
Poses a much more risk, and that it's not brought over by immigrants, illegal aliens, however you want to say that.
Yeah. Well, a lot of, like, I was trying to explain today, he wasn't listening, but a lot of those countries have socialized medicine, and a lot of those kids actually get their vaccines routinely because they have access to health insurance, versus here in America, if you don't have health insurance, it's more than likely you're not going to get your vaccination.
Agreed. But just be aware that, just wanted to make a shout out on a positive note for Palm Springs. It's a wonderful town. Anybody's thinking about it, come visit us.
All right. Sounds good, Cheryl. Appreciate the call.
I appreciate you filling in for Tom. You've been just wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, there you have it. Cheryl from Palm Springs, California. Eric, take an issue with the other guy, Bob, giving that town a bad name.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very tolerant town. I mean, there's a big gay population there. It's a very cool town.
Yeah, that's from what I understand. It's supposed to be fun to go on vacation there. It's not too far from the Arizona border, right?
No, it's like 4 hours from here.
4 hours from Phoenix, right?
From Phoenix, yeah.
Yeah, that's not so bad. All right, let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's go to Beth. Beth is on the line from New York City. How you doing there, Beth? Or Ben.
Okay.
It's Ben.
And yourself?
It's BS. This is Ben. How are you, Ben?
Okay. You're here. You can hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear you. How's everything in New York City? That's my old stomping grounds. I went to NYU back in the day.
Oh, not too bad. It's, you know, it's okay with the, it's a good mayor in there now, better than before anyway.
Right, right. So what's your thoughts today, Ben?
Well, I wanted to suggest intravenous vitamin C in mega doses for treatment of Ebola.
Okay.
There is information from a doctor who treated over 2,000 people with intravenous vitamin C, and he's suggesting using 180 grams per 24 hours.
Okay.
And that if the fever isn't controlled after that that much administration, that you keep increasing it until that you control it.
And interesting. I haven't heard about that yet, but I'll definitely do the research on that. I'll tell you, the vitamin C, though, reminds me. You remember Linus Pauling?
Yes.
Yeah, he was a huge advocate of using, you know, extreme doses of vitamin C just routinely to prevent infections, cancer, whatnot. And he actually practiced what he preached. And I think Linus Pauling lived to like age 95 or older. And he was a big proponent of vitamin C. Nobel Prize winner, too, right?
Yes.
That's yeah.
For the DNA, discovering the double strands.
Well, no, that wasn't Pauling. That was the Watson and Crick. That was Watson and Crick. But listen, I appreciate the call there for sure, and I'm going to get to the Freedom Lines here. But they just had the Nobel Prize announced for chemistry, Eric. Is that not correct or no?
Yeah.
You followed that,
right? It was the guy with the microscope.
Yeah.
They won for they're working nano microscope.
Yeah, it's basically the super resolve is it fluorescence or fluorescein? Fluorescein microscopy.
I'm going with that, Mike.
Yes, I think it goes to like the nanometer, which is, if you think
right,
a nanometer,
tiny.
That's like, because you go millimeter is a thousandth, micro is a millionth, so nano is like a billionth, right, of a meter, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a billionth of a meter, but they chemically figure out a way you can look at that. Could you imagine looking at something a billionth?
That'd be pretty cool to see all those things down there.
And it's a real world down there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually a physical world down there. And so they got the Nobel Prize on that. There was three.
Nobel or Nobel?
Nobel. It's the, yeah. I think it's Nobel, too.
Yes,
it was the Nobel Prize.
It's Nobel to win.
Eric Betzig, an American scientist, and then William Morner, also an American scientist.
There was some guy named with the last name Hell.
No, it was Germany's, yeah, Stefan Hell.
Hell.
Yeah, Stefan Hell. They won the 2014 Nobel Prize for Chemistry.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb broadcasting from the Oasis in the Desert, a progressive Oasis, 1480 KPHX. Okay, welcome back to the final segment today of the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in right now. So I'm going to take an opportunity, Eric, as we always do, to thank Tom himself.
Absolutely.
Sean, Shane.
Jim.
Jim. Who else?
And the new board op.
And the new board op. We don't know his name yet.
His name's Troy.
Troy. And Troy as well. All right. We want to make sure that we get everybody, and they do a great job. Get us all hooked up and situated and make our jobs a hell of a lot easier here. And speaking of hell, we talked about in the last segment the guy who won the Nobel Prize. But Alfred Nobel, do you know what his main claim to fame was?
I don't recall.
He's a guy who had like invented or developed dynamite and other explosives.
Which is good and bad.
Yeah, but it's kind of interesting. Like in 1901, he established the Nobel Prize, and he did it for achievements in science, literature, and peace in his will. And so each year, those particular areas are looked at, and they find out who's doing the cutting-edge research.
And they get like $1 million or something?
Yeah, they get like $1 million, and if there's more than one winner, I think they split it up evenly.
In that case, yes, I read
yeah,
they split.
But I just thought it was kind of interesting that Alfred Nobel, his claim to fame was explosives and dynamite, and now he's got all this prestige for a pretty reputable award.
Well, dynamite was a pretty big thing during the industrial age, wasn't it? And before, just slightly before?
I don't know. The only guy I remember from dynamite was the guy was in that TV show, Jimmy Dynamite. Do you remember him?
Yeah, you're talking about it was a sitcom in the 70s.
I forget what the name of that sitcom
Me
was.
Too.
Yeah, but he was funny.
J.J. Jimmy Walker.
J.J. Jimmy Walker. Dynamite. But Linus Pauling, the last point of reference here, too, he did win two Nobel Prizes. He won it for chemistry in 1954, but he also, interestingly enough, just 8 years later, in 1962, he won it for peace. So he's the only Nobel Prize winner in two different categories.
Didn't President Obama get one for peace, too?
Yeah, but now he's got to get one for physics or chemistry or like that. So I think it's going to be tough for him to do that. But if he knows how to basically infect 100,000
children
with these, you know, infectious diseases, he's got to know something about science.
Is there a category for magic? Because it's kind of magical how he's bringing all those
things. Or madness. Or madness, too. So, all right, listen, let's get back to the callers as we finish out the program today. And let me see. Let's go first up in the queue. Let's try Mark from WCPT. Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I want to tell you about something you can make out of it what you like. But
Now you got another conspiracy now, because that's usually code word for you have a conspiracy.
It's a provocative conspiracy theory, yes. I had a friend who was in the military, was in the army. He was a driver for a colonel, and he and the colonel used to talk. And the colonel told him some things that were like apparently like the inside dope on some things. Mm-hmm. And he said that all these exotic viruses, you know, the AIDS virus, the Ebola virus, the flesh-eating bacteria, all these exotic diseases that seem to come out of nowhere were, in fact, experiments in germ warfare by the U.S. military. Mm-hmm. Now, it's long been believed about the AIDS virus in the gay community, African-American community. I read a story in Final Call, which is Louis Farrakhan's paper here in Chicago, by an ex-military officer who was, in fact, involved in germ warfare, who was convinced that the AIDS virus was in germ warfare. Also, the Khmer Rouge was reported to have used flesh-eating bacteria when it was doing its thing in the 70s, and then it came out years later that the United States was supporting the Khmer Rouge.
Right. Well, let me do this, Mark. I mean, I'm not discounting what you're saying. Look, there's no question that there's a category that we know of. It's called bioterrorism. I mean, we've seen anthrax scares here in this country. There was a threat of maybe somebody getting the smallpox virus activated again and spreading into the public. So to me, it's not so much that the government, Mark, is doing this, because anybody with scientific knowledge can do it, whether it's a government or whether it's an individual scientist or whether it's a private enterprise. Make no mistake about it. With genetic engineering and molecular manipulation, you could take innocuous infectious agents that really don't cause much problem in the body, alter the outer protein code, alter a little bit of the genetics, and you can make something deadly. So I'm not discounting what you're saying. Government can create these things in a lab. Private enterprises can, and private individuals can. So, you know, hopefully you would hope that in this particular country that our government is not creating infectious illnesses to target African Americans or to target the homosexual community. I would have faith in my government that they're not operating at such a level. But look, who knows? You never know what can happen out
look,
there.
Look, there's an article here on Reuters that just came out the other day. It says HIV pandemic's root traced back to 1920s Kinshasa in Africa. So, I mean,
wasn't that where Obama was from?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he brought it over, and then
his great 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 grandmother is the one who started AIDS. Now,
oh my God!
See, look, we're onto something. See how easy it is to do investigative journalism.
Oh, it's awesome!
It's one click away.
Google's just the best for that.
Absolutely. All right, let's go over next to Let's say Jim. Jim's calling from Toledo, Texas, from Free Speech TV. Jim, you're live on the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well, Jim. What's on your mind today?
What's on my mind? This is kind of a strange thing to talk about, but before anybody assumes that I'm making some sort of a disparaging racial comparison, nothing could be further from the truth.
Okay.
I've gone through three rounds of the ribavirin interferon, and the last round, the third round, was with a protease inhibitor called telaprevir for hepatitis C. And in doing so, I finally was able to get cured on the third time in 2011. However, the side effects were just so unimaginable, it's almost debatable whether that was even, the cure was even worth it. But the fact is that when I was speaking with my doctor and asking him about the cases that with other patients, I said, how are some of your other patients dealing with this? And he would never release names or anything, but he would tell me,
certain
characteristics.
All right, well, listen, unfortunately, I'm going to have to let people kind of hinge on your very last word there because we have to end the program right now. So maybe you can call in tomorrow and speak to Tom and finish up that story. But as always, my friends, thank you for tuning in to Tom Hartman program, the number one progressive program in the entire world, in the entire universe. So always an honor and a privilege to participate. And as Tom always says, remember, democracy, it's a participatory sport. So tag, you're in.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.